of intimacy, even though they're very real. You don't have to be bound by that decree that history is bound to repeat itself. You don't have your own father's DNA. You have his DNA. And so you don't have to carry what your parents gave you. You can walk in freedom, freedom from everything. You don't have to repeat the past. Like psychologists like to tell us, we will. Today's talk is going to be a lot more fun. They're not going to be as serious or as whatever. A lot more informational, a little bit of biology. And I hated biology. I hated science. The only science, in my opinion, is any good is physics, and that because it involves a lot of math. Anyway, we're going to start this section on men aren't perverts with a depiction of the difference between boys and girls and which is better. Most of us remember those days when we thought boys were weird. And then we get a little older and there's something that happens inside of us. We're not sure what to do. In Bambi, they call it Twitter-pated. And then we're fascinated with them. And then we hate our fascination with them. And then we come to realize some things about them that we don't understand and that really disgusts us. And one of those things is the way that I want to talk about is that men are visual. And this has been hammered to us so many times that men are visual. You have to be careful what you wear because men are visual. You have to be careful. And it's been indoctrinated into us. And we've come to feel like, I think, that that's all. Well, actually, somebody said to think about it every 7 seconds or every 20 seconds. And I asked my husband. Of course, he is 52. He said no. But then, you know. I'm not going to go there. But we've come to think that's all they think about is sex. And it disgusts us partly because we don't understand it. Men are visual. And we've heard it, and it starts when they're very young. So I read this story when I was about this woman who took her son with her to the fabric store, Joann's or wherever. She kind of lost track of him a little bit. She thought it'd be safe looking at pattern books. She was doing some shopping and then all of a sudden he pipes up. He said he was looking at the section of patterns on panties. Why anybody wants to make their own underwear is beyond me. Lingerie? I mean, I'll just buy it. I'm not making it. Anyway, so he's looking in that lingerie undergarment section. All of a sudden he pipes up for everybody here. Mommy, every time I look at these girls, my pee-pee stands up. Now, get away from the embarrassment of it. It's the reality that they live with. And as mothers, when we see this in our boys, when we realize it in our boys, it causes us to ache for what they're going to face. And when I go to the store and when I see the magazines, I just grieve for what's bombarding my sons. But I train them different than and it's not a battle that I think they have to fight. But what I would talk about today, and I'm going to move this over here. Usually I like it beside me, but or I'll get off so I can walk around. What we're going to talk about today is the male brain. Okay, men's brains are actually wired very differently than ours. All right, their structure is different. Sometimes you can tell because they can't find things, and there's other indications that their brain isn't quite normal. They also have a very different chemical hormone mix that happens, the thing that goes on. Now, just as we are normally, now I'm making generalizations here because I don't know how many times I've sat in a pew at a marriage conference and they've said, this is the way men are and this is the way women are. Then I'm thinking, then I'm very gender confused. Because everything you're saying about the men, that's me. My husband can multitask. I cannot. He's finally convinced me of that truth. I've tried to hold on to it because women can multitask. This woman can't. Women are feelers. Men are thinkers. I'm a thinker. Anyway, so I'm making generalizations here. But the visual wiring of men and the emotional wiring of women is one that's pretty standard. No matter how masculine I am in my thinking and in the way my brain works, I'm still much more emotionally, relationally oriented than visually oriented. And we see this when they look at certain pictures. When we see certain pictures, we have an emotional response. Generally speaking, well, we see a guy without a shirt on, it's probably not going to be an emotional response. But depending on the guy, there's sometimes I'm like, keep your shirt on. What did you say? Depends on what time of the month it is. That too. Yes. All right, so now I want you to imagine Walmart has Auntie Anne's. The worst time to go to Walmart is when they've just pulled them out of the oven, right? And I can go to Walmart convinced that I'm thinking that when I go to bed at night, by going to Walmart, I'm not going to get a pretzel. I can do this. And I'm walking in the store, not even thinking about a pretzel. I'm not going to get a soft pretzel. Well, I'm just thinking when I'm planning my trip. At night, see, at night it's so easy to say no to everything except sex. It's so easy to be like, I'm not going to have chocolate tomorrow. Last night I did. I lay in bed. I'm going to swear off sugar. I'm going to be done with sugar. I can do this. I'm not going to eat any sugar. I'm going to do this. Well, morning hits, and all of a sudden the first thing I want is, No. I'd rather have a soda in the morning. So anyway, I'm walking into Walmart. I'm determined. I got to lose weight. I want to get healthy. And I'm not going to get Auntie Anne's pretzel. And I might not even be thinking about it. Sometimes I do decide beforehand. You know, they say that's the way to avoid temptation is to decide in advance what you're going to do. That's what I do. Doesn't always. Yes. Yes, doesn't always sell. So I walk into Auntie Anne's and all of a sudden I smell it. And instantly, I can taste it. My mouth starts to water and I want it. And I spend the rest of my journey through the store arguing. No, actually, but I can get far enough away that sometimes you can't, depending on. But I'm in my mind and I'm arguing. Am I getting it? No, I'm not. I'm not. Yes, I'm back and forth. And there, you know, you have that arguing going on in your mind. And there's a point that you realize one side has won the argument. Even though you haven't physically gotten the pretzel, you haven't really gone, and you still have the decision to go, okay, that's a part of our brain that lights up, that we want it. And it's called the nucleus accumbens, and it's located, if you drill a hole through here, we nurses here, you would come to it kind of in the center of the brain, right in here, okay? And it's in both the hemispheres. It's the reward center of the brain. Man, I am lost this weekend. What in the world is going on with me? I'm way ahead of myself. All right. And it's that part of the brain that signals all sorts of pleasure. That's the part of my brain that lights up when I want a pretzel or when I think of chocolate and caramel combined or just a spoonful of caramel sauce. That's the part of my brain that lights up. Okay? Men's brains, the visual center of their brains that receives visually is larger than women's. Women's emotional center of their brain, called the limbic, that is larger, okay? Men's, they're visual. So this nuclear accumbens, what happens when they see a woman who's dressed to show off her figure or whatever, even sometimes, they get desensitized because they've been told all along that men are visual and it's okay. No, it's not okay. So depending on where they are in their redemption process. They see a woman, and that center of their brain lights up instantly. It's not a choice. It's a biological response. It's the same biological response. When I smell Auntie Anne's pretzel, I want it. I can taste it. That is not a choice that I'm making. Then I have a choice, because after I've smelled it, and that instant lighting up in that nuclear accumbens, then it moves to the cortical section of my brain, so that then I think, and that's why I'm arguing the rest of my, for guys, when they see a female, when they see a figure, and like I said, depending on the stage of their redemption, their process in redemption, very early in it, if they feel like, oh, I can just do whatever I want, it doesn't take, some people say if they're dressed sexually, forget it. That's a lie. If they're dressed sexually, I know guys who get turned on by long hair. I'm not wearing my hair up. That's just a headache, literally a headache. Some have foot fetishes. You can't. So if they're very early in their journey, it doesn't take much, whatever they look at. But the further on down they get, a woman has to be pretty provocatively dressed, the more freedom they get. But like I said, they see a woman who's dressed in a certain way, or they see a female figure, and that part of their brain lights up instantly. No choice. They have no control over it. Then it moves to the cortical thinking. That's where they have control. I want to read a quote here. A man's visual nature, combined with testosterone and other brain chemicals that affect memory, sexual bonding, and emotions, makes a guy far more likely to perceive sights as sexual in nature in the first place. So, when this nuclear accumbens lights up, I want to differentiate here, because I know when I'm thinking of this, if I were in your shoes, I'd be like, yeah, they have some choice. They have a choice that it's the instantaneous response in that section of their brain that is biological. And I believe it's God-given. Then it moves to the cortical. It doesn't stay there very long. They have a choice then what to do with it. That's where we need to train our boys. We need to help our boys understand that just because they get turned on by a sight doesn't mean they need to think on it and store it. Once it moves to the cortical section of their brain, we need to train our boys what to do with that choice. But for us as women to understand, that's just a biological response. And then we don't need to be disgusted by it. It's the way God made it. It's because it causes them to seek out relationship. Okay? Now, so neuroscience has told us that first reaction is instinctive and biological, but the next step is a choice, okay? Now, women are visual too. And well, granted, I'm not visual. Even in learning, I'm an auditory learner. I'm a words person. Now, I see a nice looking guy without a shirt on. I'm like, ooh, that guy's hot. But that's about all. I don't go any further than that. But some women are more visually stimulated, and it does. They have a turning on feeling when they see a guy, well built or whatever our desires are. I like beards. Some of you don't like beards. Can't convince my husband to keep his. Anyway, that's between him and I. So we are visual. Some women are visual, but even visual women, when they see an attractive man, it's not when they've done MRIs between guys and girls. So I'm not talking. We all have various responses. Like I said, I'm not visual. Some of you are very visual, and we're all in this spectrum here. But when they've done MRIs on females and males. On males, that nuclear accumbens, that center that instantly lights up. On females, it's the cortical section that lights up. It's the thinking section that lights up. And that's what gives us the idea that it can be controlled, that they don't have to think that. Because our cortical section is what starts firing. And we're thinking he's hot. Ooh. And then we can go on in our choosing process. Their initial thing is biological in another center of their brain. And it takes a split second to move into the cortical section. So we get disgusted because we see ourselves. We know how we are. We see an attractive guy, and we're thinking, "Oh, he's hot." But we're right. We're already. It's we're what? We're past it. We're thinking. We're already thinking when we get that initial response. That's the part of our brain that's firing, but it takes a second or two for them, for that brain, for it to transfer into the cortical section. Okay, it's a little slower. They are. That's true. My husband gets whiplash in our conversations. Yeah. Okay. Now, this is important to understand, like I said, because we have a tendency to get disgusted at their instant response, and we're turned off, and we feel like they're perverts. God designed them this way, and I don't think it was an accident. We need relationships, okay? We are emotionally wired, and we get into a relationship, and we give sex, and that communicates, that connection establishes our, but we are emotionally wired, and it's the emotion we need, or it's the emotional needs that we have, and we feel them being met when he says, I love you, I care about you, all these things. A guy has this, sex is not a need. I'm going to go into that later. I'm not trying to establish that, but that when that cortical brain, then you have that, they want to find a way of that desire being realized. That's being lighted. So they step into their cortical thinking. And when they're in their cortical thinking, a guy who's redeemed, you know, is going to join with a woman. So it's that visual nature that causes them to seek a woman. And it's our emotional wiring that causes us to seek a man. Okay? They don't stay in that thing. What I think is that a lot of guys aren't in touch. I don't know this. I haven't talked to a lot. But, I mean, if you're married and you talk to your spouses... And my husband is more of a thinker, and so sometimes it's harder for him to identify his feelings. But I don't know how much guys, particularly boys, understand the emotional need that sex meets. And I don't think we do. And so they see, we see, or you get turned on in sight, and that's out, and it stays there. And the world tells them, this is every man's battle. This is, you're going to put up with this the rest of your life. You can't help it. And they tell the guys, they excuse or justify. We don't need to excuse the way God wired them to instantly that part of their brain. What we do need to understand is when it moves into the cortical thinking, it is completely in their control. And I just lost my train of thought. So let me go to my notes. Whenever I get sidetracked, I don't know how some people do it. They can go off on a rabbit trail and come right back where they were. I can't do that. So what I was saying was I don't know that all are aware of what the emotional need that sex meets. And I realized this. Well, I'm not getting ahead of them. Well, yeah, well, don't worry about it. Yesterday I talked about all the wounds I had that caused me to hate sex. And in the process of those wounds, I told you what I told my husband one night, and I hated it. But then I got to a place that I didn't, you know, if you don't want sex with your husband, and there are various seasons we go through, and we have lots of little ones, meeting our husband at the door with a saran wrap is just not going to happen. And if I'm really glad to see you, it's because I'm hoping you'll change the baby, not because I'm thinking of climbing in bed with you at night. Here, the kid, I need a break. And then we get to bed, it's like, can I sleep? Because in about 2 more hours, somebody's going to wake up. So I'm not talking about that. But if our lack of desire for a husband is a continual thing, there's something emotional going on. It might not be. Well, there are women who have low sex drives. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Because sex itself is not a need.
Right.
Yes, I think that you can, what I'm saying is in an intimate relationship, if I'm pushing my husband away repeatedly, when I have a marital relationship, no, and I want to stress to everybody that's single, sex is not a need. We're going to get to that. It meets needs, but we tend to think that it is a need. But in a relationship, if I'm pushing my husband away, is there something going on? So I'm in this healing process and wanting to enjoy sex more, still thinking guys are perverted, it's all they want, they'll never be happy, they'll never be satisfied, you know, all those things that, if we're honest, we all think. at some point in time, unless you have a higher sex drive than your husband, then you're wishing that he wanted sex more, which does happen. And I feel for the women, getting another rabbit trail here, I feel for the women who have a higher sex drive than their men, because everybody tells us that men have a higher sex drive. So what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me if I'm wanting sex more than my husband? And it's nothing to do with you. It's nothing to do with you. It could be the way God wired the two of you. It could be emotional wounds in him. It could be anything. But
it could be a stage.
Yeah. Yes. But I'm talking about marriages that, for the whole marriage, I've talked to women who they could have it a lot, and their husbands could have it once a week or once a month, and they're fine. And it makes us, because the way society has told us, it makes us feel less as women when that happens. That's not the truth, okay? I keep getting on these rabbit trails. So anyway, I'm trying to heal. I'm wanting to meet. I hated sex, didn't want anything to do with it. And for all of you who are not married, there is a good ending to the story, okay? That my children often get embarrassed at it so, because it's so good. They like it, but they get embarrassed. And we love embarrassing them. So,
huh?
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so my husband came. He lost his dad when his dad died, and this is what clued me in. It moved me away from men are pervert. All they think about is sex. All they need is sex. Into another realization of my husband's psyche and his heart and mind in regards to sex. His dad died. He went out the chicken house, came in, and he was crying some. Or no, it was the night he died. We got home from the hospital. Anyway, it was one of those nights, and he needed sex. Now, and how many of us women, when our dad dies, do we want sex that night? No, I don't think many of us. Some of us might, because we need that. But for him, it was an emotional need. He was hurting deeply. He had lost something, and he needed an emotional connection. He needed that need met, and sex met that need. And I'm like, whoa, I've never read about this in books. This is off my charts. I don't know how to process this. It just blew me away. We did, because I was meeting his need. It's easy to meet when they're really needy like that. It's those other times when they're needy that we're, you know, we all say no sometimes. But I realize there's more to the male brain, more to their emotional makeup than I'm even aware of. It's not just that they think about sex all the time. Sex is meeting something for them that I didn't realize. Okay? And I really got ahead of myself. Do I back up? I'm going to put that on hold. That was a transition for me, because that was a transition for me realizing it, that men, it's not just about sex. There's an emotional connection that occurs with a husband and a wife. But that emotional connection occurs in the limbic system, and women's limbic systems are larger than men's. That's why it's easier for men to go from person to person to person, because they're not as in touch with their emotions. It's easier for them to go to person from person to person. So those things combine to make us feel like they're perverted. Okay, so this visual nature of guys, and we've been indoctrinated. We've been told you got to be careful what you wear. You got to be careful how you dress. You got to be careful, you know, don't wear too low. Don't wear too short. Don't wear too tight. Don't accentuate. So I want to talk a little bit about this. And if I were speaking to men on this, on the visual nature, I'm speaking to women to give you an understanding, to help you understand that our guys, our sons, our husbands, our male friends are not perverts because they're visual, because that instant response, any more than you're perverted if you can taste chocolate when you see a Hershey bar, or we can taste, okay? So that's not. What we have done in the church is we've said they can't help it. It's a battle they're going to fight. It's just the way that God made them. So, in order to keep them from lusting, you better dress right. Okay. Now, if I were talking to men, and somebody asked me about talking to my boys, I did talk to one of my boys so far about all this. When I'm talking to my boys, I'm empowering them that you don't have to fight this battle. Training them what to do with those responses and how to move into. And I'm not blaming girls. And I'm not going to anyway give them the idea that if girls dressed right, you wouldn't have to lust. This is your. You have that initial response. It moves into cortical thinking. You have a choice, son. How are you going to view her and all that? Okay. But I'm talking to women here to help us understand. We are not in any way. Now, I got couple teenagers back there and a couple here. And we've all felt it. But you all know, remember what it was like in the teenage years? It was bombarded. You are not responsible for the purity of the men you know. You are not responsible for their lustful thoughts. No matter what you wear. I remember one day telling my husband in a rebellious state. I went through a rebellious state. And then I went through the good Mennonite state. And now, I'm not really rebellious, though some people think I am. I don't know. But anyway, I remember telling him, I should be able to walk around naked and it shouldn't affect the guys. And actually, my husband said, well, yeah, that's true, but it does. He agreed with me, but I didn't understand all this yet. Okay, we are. So I want to reiterate, because I think when you've told girls all their lives that the way they dress affects men in such a way that they're responsible for their lustful thoughts, when she gets abused, she's going to think it's her fault. We're already wired to take it as our fault. We already are going to blame ourselves for it anyway, and that just adds one more reason to blame it. There is nothing sexually provocative about a six-year-old. Now, I know there are men who get turned on by six-year-olds. They're the rarity, okay? It's only a small step. And if we're telling our girls you're responsible for the way the men think, then when they get molested, they're going to think it's their fault. And it's not. It's not your fault. If people then lust after you, it's not your fault if you get abused. It's not because of what you wore, nothing. If a guy leers at you from across the street, it's not your fault. And we've shamed ourselves, been shamed into it. I would like to take another approach, though, in the way we dress. And this is not a but, because I want that statement that I just said to be the found. You are not responsible. I think we need to approach the way we are, the way we dress, from another perspective. I have a friend who was just recently diagnosed with diabetes. He hates vegetables. He likes junk food. And he's a bachelor, so he doesn't really cook a whole lot. And it's hard for him to change his eating habits. He's trying. I haven't talked to him recently, so I don't really know how. But I mean, so he needs to change his eating habits. When he comes to my house, what do you think I'm going to try to cook? I'm going to try to cook something that he can eat, right? Is it my fault if he eats the cookies that I left on the counter? It's not my fault, but I'm trying. There's so many nuances here, depending on where our hearts are and where our brains are and what we've. We could put the cookies away. But in saying all that. Right. In saying all that, I'm not saying if I dress in a certain way, I'm offering myself. See? I'm not in any way offering myself. What motivates me to cook differently when my friend comes over? Love and respect and honor. Okay. Paul repeatedly, when I was a Jew, I was a Jew. When I was a Gentile, I was a Gentile. He wouldn't take payment wherever he went. He said, you're free to. He said that workmen should be paid. Don't muzzle the ox while it's treading the grain. But he himself didn't seek payment when he went somewhere. Wherever he went, he did what would honor and respect the people with whom he was with. Not all things are lawful, but not all things are beneficial. Because I love you, I won't have the cookies. I won't even make cookies that day. Paul was like, if you love someone, don't eat pork when you're with them. It's no big deal. You know? If it's gonna bother them, you're not responsible for their falling. No, but you know, why can't you go a meal without ham? When you're around the Jews, okay? Do it. And I'm really, really wanting to stress, because I'm finding when my older two girls went through their teenage years, It was we were in that good Mennonite patriarchal stage, and they had to wear dresses all the time. And I did a lot more. I don't know if they really felt shamed, but we were more strict on what we wore.
I wore the wrong size.
She always wore something three sizes too big because she was afraid of accentuating her figure. Now I've got another one coming up, and I'm trying, all aware of all this, help her see that and not shame her. Okay, and that's the thing I want to stress here, especially, is to not shame us. But can we, from a place of, I love my brother, we've done this, I'm responsible for men's lustful thoughts, that women are responsible. And in rebellion to that, we move to the opposite end of the spectrum and say, I'm not my brother's keeper, I can wear whatever I want. Mm-hmm. That's his problem, that ain't my problem. Now, this isn't Jesus. Mm-hmm. And this isn't, it's not Jesus either. I'm trying to think of the word I want. It's just not responsible. It's not, everybody's responsible for their own salvation. Okay? Can we find in our hearts to understand men aren't perverted? That brain area of their brain lights up, and I'm not responsible for that. But can I help them as I would help a diabetic friend? Okay? Out of love. Out of love. Not out of duty. If you're going to do it out of duty, and not out of a paranoia. You're standing in front of the mirror. You have your own standards, and be content with your own standards. It's okay to ask somebody what you think. But then, you know, when you ask your husbands, they're not really the best judges. Yeah, but they're turned on by anything you wear, nothing you wear.
He will be honest.
He will be honest. Okay.
He doesn't want me to
yeah.
wear something out if he thinks it's a little too much.
Yeah. A lot of it is checking your heart. A lot of it is checking your heart. Okay. And you might show a little cleavage, but you're still concerned for your brother, and that's not that big of a deal. Okay. A lot of it is finding out. And when you know who you are, when you are secure in the Father's love, the way you dress, won't try to draw attention. And you're going to develop your own style that is attractive to you, that looks good on you, and that is modest for you. Anybody feeling like I'm blaming you? I'm really trying to walk this fine line because I've experienced both extremes. I've lived both extremes. I've had both that, and I don't want to do that. And it's easier for me at 50 now. You know, a woman showing off what she's got at 50 is different than a 16-year-old, let's be honest here. I mean, although some of these actresses, I'm thinking they're either lying about their age or they got some photoshopping or something going on. They look good for 50. Plastic surgery, yes. All right. It is not your responsibility. And if it needs to come from a place of love. And I would encourage parents with daughters to allow your daughters to find that place too, with some guidance. I'm not giving you girls permission to wear whatever you want, those of you at home, but helping them see. If they're constantly wanting, being sensitive to what they're giving off and not assuming. It's easy for us as moms to start assuming. You know, maybe my kid's act way wholly different. Maybe my daughter's acting out this way because maybe somebody said something to her that shamed her, and now she's acting out of that shame. Okay? So there's a tension there in helping people. There's tension there in your own heart. But it has everything that God wants us to do. He wants us to do it from a place of love, honor, and respect, not out of obligation. And if you're not at that place, if you're still... When I did this talk over in Baltimore, my daughter Carrie came to me. She said, I'm still wrestling with that men aren't perverts thing. She said, she's still wrestling with it. And so you can still be wrestling with it, and that's okay. If I just gave you a little glimpse of how men think and that what it means for them to be visually wired, don't allow that. Allow that seed to plant, and you can let it ferment, or you know, you can put it on a shelf, and don't get paranoid. Because trust me, with all the fetishes these days, you have no idea what you would basically stay home or wear a burqa. Just even your eyes, if you have blue eyes or something like that, it's whatever. Okay. Now, they're visually wired, and sex meets an emotional need. For us, how do we feel connected with our husbands or people, relationships? What makes us feel connected with them? Talking. Time. We need an emotional connection with people, right? And that we need our husbands, or we need to be told, I love you, right? And I love you with action. I'll wash the dishes. Yes. Yeah. Without strings. And we want to know we're beautiful. I don't know why God made us in such a way that we all want to know we're beautiful. More and more, it seems like we're getting into the physical appearance is getting more where I think guys are more and more feeling that. Guys tend to want to feel powerful and admired, but not necessarily for beauty. I mean, more for who they are, for their masculinity or something. I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
That brings up a question.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I say thanks. I look just like.
That too.
So we tend to hear love through words and through time and through acts of services. Men have one love language, sex. Now, they do have the other love languages too, quality time, okay? But sex meets their need for, communicates them love to a degree that doesn't communicate to us, okay? And it tells them that they're loved, tells them that they're desirable, tells them that they're respected, tells them a whole slew of things that we would have to have other ways of being communicated.
Are you going to talk about the actual chemicals released when?
Next time, yeah, in a little bit. Yeah, we're going to take a break. I'm going to get to that. That's the fun part. It is. And you can add to it too if you want to. So we've often asked the question, I don't know. I make generalizations a lot. How many of you thought, how often do we need to have sex? I know back then I did. Now it's not how often do we have to. It's how often do we get to. Then it was how often do we have to. So you ask your husband, and you say, okay, well, let me answer it. How often do you need to hear I love you? Now, if someone said to you, well, how often do you need to hear I love you? You need to hear it once a day? That's fine. I'll tell you once a day. I'll make sure to. Just tell me how much you need to hear I love you. Or how often do you want me to wash the dishes? Now that they might be a little more clueless about. But you see what I'm saying? You know, if somebody comes to you and says, how often do I need to show you I care? There's something going on in our brain that, what is it? What is it communicating to you? It's a duty. I've got this line. I'll fill it. I'll do it. Just tell me what I need to do. I'll do it. So I can communicate. Were you thinking something?
No.
Okay.
I personally,
yeah.
I feel like it's okay sometimes to do it out of duty because.
Yes. It is. It is.
Recognition that your husband needs you. And doing it out of duty. Because I love him to make it right.
Yes. We do, and I'm going to talk about you get to say no another time, but yes. But when we're, it's communicating love. We want our husbands to communicate love to us when they don't really feel like it too. We want them to wash the dishes when they don't really feel like it. And it's when they wash the dishes when they don't feel like it that really expresses the love the most. Okay? But what I want us to understand is this is the way we communicate love to them. One of the primary ways that we communicate love. It tells them, you are my one and only. It tells them, I respect him. And there are so many things you communicate, especially when you communicate, when you do it, when you don't really feel like it. Okay? So research tells us that men and women approach sex differently, duh, and they have a different type of desire. We don't think about sex as much, and we need to plan for it. Generally speaking, we need to get our minds into it. Although I can think about it all day when I go to bed, I'm like, I'm too tired. I can be not thinking all day, and I'm like, ooh, this is a good time. As a general rule, I mean, that's what they tell us. How many of us moms have heard that? Well, just psych yourself up. Psych yourself up for it. Plan for it. Just decide you're going to and send them text. Sending the text in the beginning of the day does is it just ties you to something you might not feel like doing later. You might feel like doing later. I am, wow. I said, that happened. We won't go into that not texting back. Something happened in our communication that it broke down completely. Ruined. Anyway. Yes.
A very big black friend, 6'2", just whatever you think of when you think of big black friend. That was meant for me. Ah. Sorry, man, I think you meant just to go to dorm.
So, but we tend to not think about sex as much. And research is clear that men don't think about saying I love you as much either as women do. We are constantly, we feel it and so we want to communicate it. And it's not that they don't feel it. They want to communicate in a way that, and it's that coming together and helping us understand that delicate balance between the two. And I'm talking to, if you have a high sex drive and your husband has a low sex drive, everything I'm saying is, I don't have any of that. I don't understand that. It's really great when you both have one or the other. You both have a high sex drive. That's, yeah. Yeah, we got it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other issue.
It is a whole other issue. You feel like there's something wrong with you. Women whose husbands have a higher sex drive than they do, they feel like they hate it. They get disgusted. They're just tired of it. They don't feel love because they feel like they do. Women who have a higher sex drive than husbands, they feel like they're not desirable. They're not beautiful. What's wrong with them? And that is a whole nother issue, really, to work through. But I've heard that 40% of marriages the woman has a higher sex drive. And so I don't know if it's that high. In my experience, talking to people, I haven't seen it that high. That play out. But anyway, so if you can, so men don't think about saying words of love as often as we want either. And yet, just because they don't think about saying I love you, we can do one of, we tend to feel like, well, then do you really love me if you don't want to say it? If you're not thinking about, you know, if I have to tell you I need to, or do you really love me? And I need to hear you say, but. To hear that my husband doesn't think so much about telling me he loves me, it's like, that bothers me. Now flip that around, and that's the exact view they have of us when it comes to sex. Okay? And again, we are trying to, I'm firmly convinced that we're in the new covenant. Everything we do, God wants us to do out of love. And there are times that I do something because I don't feel like it's just because I love. Okay, and I don't want done out of obligation, but there are marriages that are distant when we're going to talk about, you know, that kind of a little bit later. There are hormones released when we have sex, and right now I'm going to talk about the male hormone that's released just real briefly. there's a male hormone that's released called vasopressin. Women release it too, but men primarily release vasopressin. Women primarily release oxytocin. It's just like testosterone, estrogen. We both have it, just in varying degrees. Vasopressin is the hormone that's released that causes a protective feeling, territorial. And that gets overblown in society. And you see that. I think that's the primary reason why in polygamous relationships, guys can have more than one wife, but girls can't have, women can't have. I always thought that was terribly unfair. And, I mean, really, to not be too graphic, we can go a whole lot longer than they can. We really could, they can. So, but it's, I think it's that protective thing that gets released, that territorial thing. This is my girl. Nobody else has my girl. And we need that. Most of us as women have a need to be protected, especially if we've been wounded. When I came out of my wounding, that was my primal need. It was, and I couldn't give voice to it, so I just protected myself. But it was like, well, somebody, somewhere, just care enough to protect me. Just somebody, anywhere. And I was like, but that's what's released. That's the hormone that's released in men when they have. And so sometimes I wonder, because we're wired so differently, because we approach sex so differently, they approach it as emotional need. When I'm hurting, I don't really want sex necessarily. Sometimes I do. But, you know, when we're grieving, when we're frustrated over the kids or whatever, but what if that he knows that vasopressin that's been released in his system numerous times, he wants to protect us, he wants to show us the love. It's still, I mean, just say, hey, I don't really need it right now. This is what I need. I need a cuddle, and that's fine. But what I want to do is help us to understand what's going on inside them so that we move away from this. Men are perverts and they think about sex all the time. Okay? They are visually wired, but it's a biological response, and we need to help them move it into the cortical. I am not one of these that believes that this is every man's battle. I do not believe that. I do not believe that their drive is something they just have to cage and tame. I believe that a man can walk in complete freedom and he can see a woman and say, wow, she's beautiful, and that's it. And I think we can help our boys do that. I think they can walk. I believe it. I believe it wholeheartedly. But if we as women can understand that thing that lights up, it doesn't make them disgusting. It's a biological response. Part of the reason they want sex a lot, for those who have high sex drives, is because that communicates love. That's how he's telling you he loves you, and that's how he receives that you love him. And then they have hormones that are released that cause him want to protect what's his. Now, some of us as women don't like that. I'm not his, I'm myself. And I understand that. But if you could just hear me through, trying to think of all the nuances that this could be is being filtered through. But it's a protective thing. It's the hormone that causes them to want to draw you close and keep you safe. Vasopressin. Yeah. And this is what, all those combined, is what the enemy has perverted and come into our eyes. Oh, well, I can see a hot guy and I don't go through that, so you're perverted. I don't need sex. And sex, when my dad died, are you kidding? That is perverted. And why are guys so territorial? If you can play that, I'm not worrying about that here, but I'm saying we see it in the world. Why can guys play around and girls can't? They're perverts. And so we combine all of those things that God designed them, and we come up with the conclusion that they're perverts. And they're disgusting. And if we can open ourselves up to why God wired them that way and respond to them or help them in love. We have husbands, if it can help us respond to them. We have sons, it can help us teach them and train them. And we have male friends, it can help us understand them. And it can help us, it can help us understand the way we dress. And I'm not, and again, I don't even want to stress that too terribly much because I think enough has been heaped on that. But just that we can, I love my brother. I love my husband. I love my sons. I love my brothers. And I love my brothers in Christ. And they're not perverted. This is the way God wired them. They've got it all mixed up. They've got, but we have too. I mean, since the fall, everything that God wired to work has been pretty well messed up. And so it's understanding that and getting back and helping each other get back. Redemption is a journey, and we're all on an individual journey. And I'm healing, and you're healing. And can we help our brothers heal? We are working out our salvation. Can we help our brothers work out their salvation by understanding them? Not that we're responsible for it, but just that when we're disgusted by them, it's hard for us to draw close to them. And in a marriage, you're either going to draw close or going to live miserable. And so we'll choose either one. I've chosen to draw close. I don't like being miserable. I'm too selfish to be miserable. And I'm too vocal to be miserable for very long without letting everybody in the world know it. So, you know, so in a marriage, I don't even know what I was going to say because I was going to go to the singles too. I don't know what is wrong with me today. I have not experienced this all that often. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, you're going to miss the next talk. You're going to miss the next little bit. No, I was going to do that. No, I was going to do it. I mean, what time is it? Because really, I'm done here. I'm just going to work through some forgiveness. See if we need any forgiveness. You got to leave in a half an hour. I can do that now if you got to leave. That's fine. No. Sure. Well. Yeah, it does.
Well, like, okay, washing dishes, since we love to use that, you know, just wash them because you love me, which he does. But then that expectation, I'm like, just don't have the expectation.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's mental.
It's a, yeah.
Whatever that is, yeah. I mean, it's just there because that's the way they're wired, and I get it, and I'm just...
It's a communication.
It's probably all in my mindset, but...
Well, no, and it's a very real thing. That we're, depending on the stage of life you're in, it's very real. And if you're staying up till 10 o'clock to wash dishes, just, you know, and you're right, you want to be able to receive love without having the expectation to give love. And that's really not part of my talk, so we can just talk about it now. No, that's fine. It was more empowering us to be able to say no because that's a communication issue, really. It's working it out. And it's a working out, a constant working out. I want you to wash. There's going to be times that I want you to do, we have with our kids too, I want you to do this because you love me. Okay? It does help me understand love and make me want to communicate, but not necessarily tonight. And there's... yeah.
Like a maybe, but not now.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So maybe we'll
handle it another time, especially when there's little kids around. The whole world is they work, they get a paycheck. They do this, they build this, they get to see it. They tear it down, they get to see it. They do dishes, they expect. I just think little boys, you know, you can keep the room, you get a candy or whatever. I think we raise boys or men to do something and get to see.
There's also a difference there. We have this idea that I think that we need to kind of, within couples and in society, to work against or speak against the roles. Washing dishes is your role, so if he does that for you, he's not doing that for you. He's doing the dishes because they need to be washed. But that's the communication that happens. And as long as we develop, and we develop I wish we had, and we developed it more in our children too. We're developing this expectation of what responsibilities are moms and which responsibilities are dads. And I just read the other day, stop telling your kids you're doing something for mom. You're not doing the dishes for me. You're not vacuuming for me. You're doing it because it needs to be done. You're part of this family. We're a team. Yeah. Yes. Now, as a general rule in our family, work because he works. I'm generally irresponsible for the... But still, when he comes home, he helps with dishes when he's home. And most of the time, I do them, or the kids do them. But it's not... We're trying to get away from that. Well, this is mom's job. This is dad's job. And that's the communication that has to occur within the family and helping our kids understand that as well. Because we're setting them up, too. I don't want to set my kids up because I generally take care of the home. That's a mom's role and this is a dad's role. No, we're a team. You bring stuff to the table. I bring stuff to the table. The kids bring stuff to the table. We're a team. Okay? One might be the pitcher, the first baseman, outfielder. We need everybody on the field. And the pitcher, if the third baseman flubs it, the pitcher's not going to say, fine, I'll walk the next guy if you're going to act like that. If you're going to make an error and get somebody on base and it's going to go and go with me, fine, I'll walk the next person. I don't really care. We wouldn't do that. Chances are, we back each other up on a team. And if the third baseman misses it, the shortstop gets it. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That was a good analogy. When they bunt the ball, the first baseman runs up. Or another example is if it's hit close enough to first, the pitcher comes over and covers first. The pitcher's not, well, some, in Little League, you do see that. That's not my job.
But then I get the junior league.
Now, is the pitcher saying, well, fine, I'll cover first base, but then make sure you do this, make sure you get a hit when we're up to bat. See, it's a balance and a team that really is something that needs to be discussed and worked out and talked about within family. And I don't know if that really doesn't help as much. When I say we have the power to say no, I say we have body space. And I don't care if you're 2 saying no to a hug from grandma, or you're 15, or you're 36. If you're 15 and you're in a compromising situation and you've gone further than you're comfortable, you have the right to say no. And if you're 34 and you're tired because the kids have been all right, you have a right to say no. Or not, but in some of those situations, well, one of those situations, as a 34-year-old, I have the right to say no. But can I out of love relinquish that right? And if I can't, and if it disgusts me, my disgust was a key to me that something was going on. But this is not the only area in a marriage where I have to lay down what I want. It's not the only area in a relationship that I have to lay down what I want. And as wives, as friends, as mothers, as sisters, in whatever relationship you have, there's times that you got to pull most of the load for a while. And are we willing to do that? Am I willing to respond to my husband out of love when I don't feel like it, even if he doesn't wash the dishes? And am I willing to? Okay, because it comes back to I'm his child. I answer to him. Okay, I'm on a team with my husband, and can I do this for him because I love God, because I love him? And after a while, we really, really tired of him. This is really moving into more of a marital, that part of it is, it's not in relationships, because you have relationships with friends, with siblings. Are you willing to be the sibling? Are you willing to be the participate in that friendship that is willing to go the extra mile if the other person doesn't, is really what it boils down to. And lots of times with a married person in that, it comes down to that. Am I willing to give when I know there's not going to be anything in return? But then there's also a personal space but I still think you have the right to say no. And a caring partner will.
It's communication. I think you have the right, or you can relinquish your right to say, what were you saying, no every time, or that you can, there's nothing wrong with you asking them to respect yours and to ask them to give without expectation.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
Like, if I constantly give without expectation, it's not really healthy. Request that of him.
Right. But I think, as generally, if this is the part of being a mother and a woman, a wife and a woman that I don't like. Women are expected to serve. Mm-hmm. I'm not a real good server. I like to run things. Mm-hmm.
It was something I did not understand how to meet Rusty's needs and his desires, what really spoke to him and what filled his, love tank. And when we did, the testing and he scored so high on physical touch and words of affirmation, and of course those were my bottom two.
Mm-hmm. That's an adjustment.
Mm-hmm. But just because I wasn't comfortable with it didn't mean it was wrong.
Yeah.
It's just that I wasn't comfortable with it. And so I had to actually push myself to hug him more and hold his hand and put my arm around him. And it felt very uncomfortable.
Right.
I wasn't a touchy-feely person. And, he would bombard me early on in our marriage with just, I'd get a card every day telling me how much he loved me, and I was like, okay, that's nice. And I would tell him, hey, but for me to do that for him, I can forget to buy a card for anybody. I'm not a card person. I love her.
I'm the same. I forget to. Yeah.
I will not miss a birthday or a holiday or just a special, I was thinking of you and I love you so much card, because that just fills him up. When I hug him, and now it's become much more comfortable. I don't think about it, it's not foreign anymore. And so when I'm doing something to fill his love tank without any expectation on my part, then it's reciprocated. I find him doing that. I walk in and I've had a long day, with whatever, and he's doing the dishes.
Right.
And he's doing them not because he really wants to do them and he's like, oh, yay, but because he knows that acts of service and gifts really fill me up.
Yeah.
So even if he stops and just, this was early on when we were broke, he took flowers from the cemetery.
I think there's seasons, especially where you're at and some of you others with young children, that you're constantly pouring out. Constantly pouring out. And not just your husband. You spend most of your waking hours pouring out, serving, and not getting anything in return. And there comes a point where you're done. And the only person in your household that really can respond to you is your husband. He's the only person with the cognitive and the ability to give something without expectation. And so all of that weariness, frustration with pouring out gets dumped on that one, gets expected that one person. Because the rest of them, I can't expect my 5-year-old, even my 12-year-old. 12-year-old boys really don't know a whole lot about, most of them, about reciprocating things. I mean, I'm still trying to convince my kids, I do for you. I need you to do for me. They don't get it. Husbands should. And so we tend to then go to them and pour out on them. And conversation, 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 and giving. And in other relationships we'll meet. And then also finding out, how is he communicating love to me? Because I feel like if we go to bed and you just want sex, I don't really feel like it. Do you really love me? Have you? How is he communicating love to me, and I'm not hearing it? Because if he's told me all day how beautiful I am, and I'm not a words person, I'm like, if you'd have washed dishes, we'd be doing something tonight. But all day, I am not, to me, he could wash, I like him washing the dishes, but it doesn't communicate anything to me. It don't matter, because you know what? She has to do them in the morning so they get left. No. No. I mean, to me, that the chores thing doesn't, doing stuff around the house doesn't, but then I'm a domestically challenged, so if you look at my house, it's no wonder. I don't really care about it being a mess anyway. You see what I'm saying? And so part of it is the stage you're in where you feel like you're constantly pouring out and you need someone to pour in without expecting anything more of me. And communicating that with your husband and making sure, do you know your love language? Do you know his love language? And then they change. Mine did. I mean, mine went, touch was at the bottom and now touch is at the top. And not just for my spouse, for other people. I find myself touching other people more when I communicate with them. But I mean, is he communicating his love for you in another way that you're not able to receive it because you're so tired or so focused or whatever? And we miss those little, spaces, and like a little glimpse. We miss those little kisses from our husbands or from people or from God or from our children that we're loved because either we're too busy, too focused on something else, or they're communicating love, their love language, and it's at the bottom of ours. Pat. Yeah.
And there was definitely no desire for romance. There was no desire. I mean, I was a mess. And if I had thought of, you know, having like a 75% burnout, if yeah. I communicated at that level, at that time in my life that I was burning out and got support at that point, I never would have gone into the.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And if we have a tendency to think, well, he should know. He should know. And we're with our friends, too. We do need to communicate. I need a break soon. And
when Nay was here a few months ago in Moscow, and she spoke about that, that really resonated with me.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not intentional about my own rest, no one else is going to notice that I'm
right.
Burning out until it's a little too far gone.
And you've done things you regret.
Mm-hmm. An hour of just reading time or completely
yeah.
cover my head and
absolutely
have a nice deep nap. If mm-hmm. I don't take care of that, then I can't meet his desire for sex. I can't continue to do all the things
you
that
can't.
He expects of me.
Right.
So I see that long before I'm in a household of men, long before anyone else.
Right.
Maybe your daughter would be a little different.
And we have.
Know.
And we have different thresholds.
Right. I need more rest.
I could never stay up as much in the middle of the night as Carrie does. And but that's Carrie's. She would think at times that it's probably not her strength. She's like, you have no idea what's going on, Matt. But I wouldn't. All hell would break loose inside of me. It just wouldn't. We have different thresholds, and it's your threshold is your threshold. You need to be okay with it. Okay. And God seems to give, no, he doesn't. He does give us, we do get more than we can handle. I'm not even going to go there. But anyway.
The standard that our mother set.
Yes.
Our
dad.
Has,
yeah.
You know, I mean,
I never,
we're allowed to go. We could have friends, we could eat whatever, cook whatever. But when we went to bed, the dishes had all better be done. I got married and found my husband and carried off my dishes.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, my dad is a literally, I grew up in a house that you could live before, literally. And so I was like, I will never be able to produce this picture. I just can't. I mean, to this day, he dated me. Her picture floor is still cleaner than my picture floor. But I married a man who didn't care.
And so we're moving more into a lot more, and that's okay, because all that goes around our sexual response as well. And you singles could be feeling left out, but you guys have relationships that you're pouring into. You have siblings, you have friends, and there comes a point where you say, I'm done. And you have to be okay with that. But you also have to be okay. Are you willing to be Jesus a little longer? Am I willing to give a little more? Mostly, if I can, it's with your siblings. Because your friends, you're not as safe to tell them what you think. So this for you guys, it really doesn't have anything to do with sex. For them, it does. But you're learning. You're learning to relate. You're also learning, don't compare yourself. We talked last time about body image, but what you can do is the same. That's what they're talking about, living up to images that then tire us out. Anyway, I wanted to pull back into the singles. We can take a break, or we kind of moved off into that. I think we'll just take a 15-minute break and come back for just a little bit if you want to. We're going to talk about us now, how sex can be fun. That's really the good part. Anyway.